It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 104 of Sports Day Plus at 6:45, where are we at in society? I have a real-life Weekend at Bernie's situation for you in Brazil. At 6:15, Justin Wells of Inside Texas joins me for a couple of segments to talk Longhorns spring game and the NFL draft. And in mere seconds, yes, the draft is just a day away. I am taking a look at Matt Miller's final first-round mock from ESPN.com and maybe some other football nuggets before the segment is through. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. The first round of the NFL draft is just a little bit more than 24 hours away. By the way, quick programming note for 1027 ESPN. You can hear each and every pick right here on this radio station starting at 7 o'clock tomorrow night after my show. As for today's show, it would be foolish of me not to give you one final mock. Well, let me caveat this. Because I may not take a look at another mock tomorrow night, but just know that I do have you covered NFL draft-wise with a couple of segments with ESPN's Matt Miller. Yeah, that's right. Matt is a not-so-undercover Texas Longhorns fan, so he is biased towards Texas guys. So I do discuss some of the best prospects from this most recent Longhorns football team who will likely hear their names called in day one, two, or three. As well as some more general interest stuff specific to quarterbacks and then what the Dallas Cowboys might do. But that's tomorrow. It's going to lead off tomorrow's show. Today, I am still leaning on Matt Miller for content. That's because he just came out with his final first round mock draft. It goes exactly like everybody is expecting it to at the very top, with the Bears taking Caleb Williams. Commanders going with Jaden Daniels at 2, which I think is the most common pick. And the Patriots, because there are trades in this draft, sticking at 3 to go Drake May. Cards go Marvin Harrison 4. And then we get our first trade with the Vikings moving up to 5, giving up their 11th and 23 picks in this year's draft, as well as a first rounder next year in order to get J.J. McCarthy. Maybe the most polarizing guy in the draft right now. There are some who fully believe that he's a winner, didn't have to do too much, so he didn't do too much on this year's Michigan Wolverines team that won a national championship, but he is that good of a pro prospect that he's worth the top 5 pick. And there's others, and I probably put myself in this category right now, that strongly feel that the jury is still out with him. And if anything, them not needing him more, even though he was clutch on the money downs and down the stretches in the few close ball games that Michigan played, that there's still some questions about J.J. McCarthy. So that's the top 5, mostly quarterbacks. From there, we can take a look at what Matt Miller has Texas Longhorn players doing. And I've said for a long time, since the end of the season, go back and check the tape if you want to, I have always felt that when it was all said and done, Byron Murphy would end up as not just a guy who goes in the top half of the first round, but he ends up as a top 10 pick. He tested really well in Indianapolis, interviewed well. People went back and really watched that game tape, including late in games and down the stretch in the season, and in that loss to Washington in the college football playoff semifinal. He was one of the best defensive players on the field for Texas that night. And I hate to make these sorts of comparisons, and I always harken back to people calling Tom Herman the next Nick Saban. Yeah, how'd that one work out? But he does have some Aaron Donald-like qualities. And perhaps not playing next to DeMondre Sweat will unlock some things for him. It obviously gets a little bit more difficult not having a space eater like DeMondre Sweat next to you, but Byron Murphy's the real deal. And Matt Miller thinks so too, because he has Byron Murphy going 8 to the Atlanta Falcons. That's right. We're building a little bit of a Austin, Texas / Texas Longhorns East in Atlanta. Bijan last year, Byron Murphy this year. I would actually be okay with that now that fatso Arthur Smith is no longer on the sidelines, doing his best to railroad the Falcons' chances at winning games. A lot more confidence in Raheem Morris getting things turned around there. Kirk Cousins being there helps. He's going to be a huge upgrade over Desmond Ridder. And if the Falcons go with Byron Murphy, a salty defense just got a whole lot better. I think that pick makes a lot of sense. Next Longhorn to go, according to Matt Miller, he has another Longhorn in the top half of the first round of this upcoming draft. That would be Xavier Worthy going to the Indianapolis Colts at 15. What a receiving core that becomes immediately. And you take a lot of pressure off of Worthy in a situation like that too, because Michael Pittman, he is your bona fide number one. Josh Downs had a great rookie season for the Colts last year. Xavier Worthy fits in nicely and becomes a matchup nightmare for a lot of opposing defenses. I know a lot of people were sold on Anthony Richardson and the limited time that he played for the Colts last year. And don't get me wrong, there were some positives. I am a bit skeptical that Anthony Richardson will be the guy in Indianapolis long term, but the Colts are giving him the best scenario possible if they go with Xavier Worthy by having an insanely talented receiving core around him and an offensive line that's going to be looking for a bounce back campaign this coming year too. Maybe asking yourself, all right, we've heard Byron Murphy, Xavier Worthy. The third Longhorn that seems to be mentioned more often than not in first round mock drafts is A.D. Mitchell, oftentimes going 28 to the Buffalo Bills. And sure enough, that's what Matt Miller has too, from ESPN.com. A.D. Mitchell to Buffalo. They have no choice but to reload at wide receiver. If not Adonai Mitchell, they, I don't want to say certainly, because when you start making very binary statements like that, it has to be this or it absolutely won't be this, you are inevitably proven wrong. But I would be shocked if the Bills didn't go wide receiver right here. And A.D. Mitchell, despite the, I don't know if you want to call it a smear piece or what, the piece that came out last week that put simplified is really talented wide receiver can be a diva, especially when he's hungry. I think that's BS, and it hasn't scared the Bills away. Or maybe the Bills are the ones floating that to ensure that A.D. Mitchell ends up in Buffalo, because they lost Stephon Diggs. I get it. The production was down the second half of last season, but he was still a number one for them for 3 years. And then also Gabe Davis being gone. So there are a few options left off of last year's team, but no obvious alpha dog in that receiving room. And I think A.D. Mitchell becomes that immediately. And that's it for Longhorns in the first round. And what do the Cowboys do? Texans don't have a first round pick. What do the Cowboys do? Yeah, they need to shore up two areas. Offensive line and up the middle of that defense. We have seen the Cowboys in previous mock drafts taking a guy like Tyler Guyton. Well, the Oklahoma offensive tackle is going 22 to Philadelphia, according to Matt Miller. But the Cowboys do stick with the offensive line and getting Amarius Mims, massive tackle out of Georgia. They do have to replace Tyron Smith, a move that felt like it had been coming for the last, what, at least 3 to 4 years, and now that is the reality. And according to Matt Miller, Cowboys may try and do that with Amarius Mims. All right, coming up here on Sports Day Plus, my buddy Justin Wells joins me from Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. One final recap of the UT spring game, and I'm going to get Justin's thoughts on the NFL draft starting tomorrow here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
It is a Wednesday, which means I get to spend a couple of segments with my friend Justin Wells of Inside Texas. InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this show, usually Wednesdays, for a couple of segments. That starts now on today's show. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
Man, I am busy. There is a ton of stuff going around on the 40 acres right now. Basketball, football, spring game, portal, recruiting. I can't even keep up. It's so much. Let's get this going.
Yep, transfer portal giveth, it also taketh, and the transfer portal has been very kind to Steve Sarkisian over these last few years. Inevitably, you will lose some talented guys from time to time, and that happened for the first time this offseason. Not to say there aren't other talented guys who have gone into the portal, but in terms of a guy who has started games over the past two seasons, who is looked at as a likely starter at a skill key position on the defensive side of the ball, Terrence Brooks is going to go play college football someplace else this next season. How big of a surprise was that, Justin, and just how big of a loss is it?
Not a surprise at all. I think it's a decent loss because you've got a guy that's got 2 years of starting experience. I love Terrence Brooks' upside. I think he's a hell of a corner. I think he's got a lot of potential. But I wasn't surprised because I feel like in some ways this was in the works. You know, at this stage right now, I think Texas is looking to upgrade at any position possible. And I think in this day and age where some players want assurances that they'll have a starting position or they'll definitely play this many snaps, I think that's becoming less and less. And now that you've got a pretty good secondary, you've got a pretty good cornerback room, and you've got a returning nickel in Jahdae Barron that can actually play some corner and will play some corner this year. And so I think at the end of the day, the Brooks marriage with Texas came to an end. Like we said again, we weren't surprised. Obviously, it came right after the spring game, so it gives Terrence a chance to try to find a better spot. But I fully expect Jahdae Barron to take over in that spot. I feel like Gavin Holmes is also going to get some looks at that spot as well. They love what Jalen Gilbo did at the nickel, so I think he'll be playing more of that star position as well. And so you don't want to lose starters. You really don't, especially for depth. Especially because guys get hurt, they get dinged up, they need rotations. You know, that's not an uncommon thing in football. You don't want to lose a starter, but we're certainly not surprised that Terrence Brooks entered the portal.
After the news dropped yesterday through Inside Texas and y'all's Twitter account at Inside Texas, you tweeted out something that I retweeted because I understand where you were coming from here. But you said, should have told Jabbar Muhammad what he wanted to hear. What did he want to hear?
Well, you know, Jabbar Muhammad, he was the transfer from Oklahoma State and from the University of Washington, was at Texas. He had gotten in the portal. It took his visit. That thing was almost done. We were fully expecting Jabbar Muhammad to end up in Austin. And I think Jabbar wanted some assurances that I had talked about previously. I think he wanted to be told, hey, there's a good chance you're going to start, or hey, there's a good chance you're going to get this many reps. And I'm not really sure how that conversation went down, but I don't think it's exactly what Jabbar wanted to hear. And if you know you've got a corner that could potentially leave in late spring like Brooks just did, I feel like you should probably tell Jabbar a little bit more of what he needs to hear so that you ensure that you've got two lockdown starting corners on your team, obviously one opposite Malik Muhammad. And so it was mainly in jest. But at the same time, there's some truth to it because I think that recruitment went sideways at the very end. I think Texas was the spot he originally wanted to go to when he entered the portal. I mean, he's got relatives on the Texas roster, but they didn't tell him exactly what he wanted to hear. And so he went on to literally greener pastures in Oregon, and he's in that rotation right now. And so hindsight's always 20/20, and that's always easy, and I'll be the first one to admit that. But when you know that there could potentially be a starting corner that leaves at some point and you've got one right in front of you that might have been the best corner you faced on the field in 2023, maybe you should tell him a few more things that he likes to hear.
Completely agreed. I understand the tongue-in-cheek nature to that tweet, but there was a lot of accuracy to it as well. So kudos to you for that one. And by the way, a day before that, another guy entered the transfer portal for Texas football, and he did play a little bit last year. He's not a starter. He probably wasn't going to be a starter during his time here. But you've been singing the praises of Savion Redd since his senior season in high school, talking about how he is a grown-ass man playing a kid/, let's say, college student's game over these last couple of years. But he was a dog, and we saw that in person last year with that Red Cat package. Is he hopefully going to get to start someplace else? Absolutely. That was a bummer for me, Justin, and I probably took it a little bit harder than I should, in part because you were so on him so early on.
Well, yeah, we're all fans of Savion Redd. If you've ever met the kid, I mean, he's fun. He's the kind of guy you want in a foxhole with you. He is a literal dog.
Yeah.
And Savion's going to fight to the end. And that's what I liked about him. He's a multi-sport kid. But at the end of the day, this is about roster management. And Savion last summer skipped quite a bit of the summer workouts.
Mm.
And he came into camp overweight. That's why he was the very last on the depth chart when fall camp rolled around. But fast forward to now, he seems like he's still a little thick. Still like he's still put on a little bit of weight. Even though I think he's a tremendous player, when put in the right position, he's been recruited over already, Trey.
Yep.
There are guys, Jarrett Gibson and Christian Clark, are ahead of him now. And that's what's going to happen in this day and age, not only at Texas, but in college football. You get recruited, you sign, you get on the roster. If you don't start making your way up that depth chart in the first 2 years, you become expendable. You become a guy that could potentially get processed out because you're going to get recruited over. This is about building the best roster possible. And with NIL and with the portal, that's given these coaches that ability to try to do that. And I think with Red, He ran out of room. You know, he had some flashes. He's a guy I think was good for the locker room because a lot of those DFW Metroplex guys know each other and they're friends. I know him and Anthony Hill grew up together.
Mm.
But like I said, if you don't start climbing that depth chart, and if you're skipping summer workouts, and if you're coming into camp overweight, those are all bad signs. And eventually what it's going to turn out is you're going to lose your scholarship and you're going to have to find a place somewhere else to play.
Any best guesses on where he ends up?
I have no clue, but okay. I think he is a match made in heaven at SMU.
Yeah.
I think SMU would be perfect for him. He's got some TCU in him too, but I could see him staying close to home, getting a little bit of NIL money, you know, dressing for the ponies. I like SMU there, but I think he's going to have some suitors.
I can't wait to see where his new home is because we're all rooting for him. Even if it didn't work out here necessarily, hopefully this is a bit of a wake-up call and he takes things a little bit more seriously when the games don't matter the most. All right, let's talk a little bit about that spring game. We're not going to beat this horse too much further, but I did want to get your thoughts, starting with Arch Manning. Obviously, that was the talk coming out of the spring game. Just how surprising was that performance for you? And maybe as important, what Trey Owens was able to do in a sort of backup role after Quinn Ewers was done after a couple of series.
Honestly, it's a spring game. And so I think the fun in it is that they look like they were having fun. Like, that's what a spring game should be. Obviously, get out of that thing healthy. But put points on the board. Give the fans something to see. And I think that young energy on this team, there's such a young, enthusiastic group in this program that goes with the veterans really, really well. They want to show out. This is their first time to really put on a show. This was Arch's first time to really unleash because we saw what Sart did to him at last year's spring game. That was damn near criminal. And so this year, I think he made up for it, and he gave him a few deep shots. He let him run behind the ones and twos instead of the walk-ons this year. And I think what you saw was what we've all seen for years. Arch Manning is a dude, okay? Like, there's not a lot on the football field that's going to surprise him. He's going to make every single throw across the hashes that he can. He is that guy. This wide receiver core is going to be ridiculously deep. And then give Trey Owens a tip of the cap. Now, he got away with some stuff in the spring game. I don't necessarily think he could have done in a regular season. Hmm. But for a early enrollee, true freshman, to understand the offense as well as Trey does and to find the guys and get the ball to those playmakers as well as he did as an 18-year-old that should be going to prom this weekend, that to me is as impressive. because this offense is incredibly complex. Sark is very hard on his quarterbacks. He is a strict, strict teacher. And so getting to see Arch Chunkett and he's happy, getting to see Trey Chunkett and he's happy, to me, that was my takeaway. I felt like the fans had fun, but I felt like the players had as much fun. And that, to me, is a recipe for a great Saturday in Austin.
Any criticisms for you coming off of Saturday's glorified practice?
Yeah, defensive back angles. Huh. The safeties took some really bad angles, and that's another thing the spring game can be good for you. You can go back and watch it. You're not going to get to play another game or hit another football player, rather, till August. So you get a lot of time to go over what you did. And some of these young guys took some pretty bad angles. But listen, that's what young players do. They're going to make mistakes. When Arch gets in eventually, he'll make some mistakes. Same for Trey Owens. That's just the nature of these players and their development. But I thought the safety angles were a little lacking. I was a little worried about that. But on the flip side, I loved that. And I thought the offensive tackles did pretty well, but except for when they were having to go line up against Colton Bosick and Colin Simmons. Those two seemed to have a burst and a giddy up and an ability to get to the quarterback. But overall, I'm not going to pick too many nits. It is the spring game. I thought it was pretty vanilla across the board. But if there's one thing that was a little disturbing was a few busted coverages in that secondary, and especially the safeties taking some bad angles.
God, please get the secondary right. It's been far too long with a secondary that is not consistent enough in terms of its performance. It seems like the talent is there now. It's about coaching them up, putting them in the right positions, and making sure that they are executing properly as well. He is Justin Wells, Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. That is segment one of two with Justin. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about a big-time get for Rodney Terry and Longhorn basketball in the transfer portal today, and get Justin's thoughts on the NFL draft, where Longhorns might end up, what his Cowboys should do, and more right here on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424. Hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays each and every week. All right, Justin, some good news from the transfer portal. It giveth and it taketh. And Rodney Terry has had a really good time in the transfer portal so far this offseason. Now, he did lose Tyrese Hunter, and he also lost Dylan Mitchell. A slight bummer because those guys were productive for you, but both were also a bit of a letdown this last season, let's just say. And he's done a great job of replenishing a roster that now loses six of its top eight guys from this last season. And that now includes the top scorer from the Oregon State Beavers. That would be guard Jordan Pope. What can you tell the people about Jordan Pope and just how things have gone for Rodney Terry so far as he reconstructs this roster here in April?
This is portal season for basketball, and I think this is going to be the norm, Trey. I think basketball is always going to have a pretty significant turnover just because there's only, 14, 15 roster spots, and you got guys graduating, you guys want more playing time. There's always going to be, I think, a lot of changing there. Rodney Terry has shown a penchant for picking some really nice guys out of the portal. And let me tell you something. The guard play bothered me last season. And that's including having Max Amos, who is one of the all-time leading scorers. Tyrese Hunter, he is what he is. Good defender. Decent ball handler. That's about it. You add Tremaine Mark from Arkansas and Jordan Pope from Oregon State. Your guard play just increased times two. You know, Pope is a kid that averaged 17 points a game last year for a good Oregon State team. This is a guy that's going to be able to come in and put the ball in the bucket, not to mention to come with the freshman, Trey Johnson, who might be the most fun player to watch on this Texas basketball roster next year. I think you just have to give Rodney Terry credit. They lost a couple guys. You've got to replenish that cupboard. And I think when you add guys like they did, of course they grabbed a couple of the Indiana State cats. But really, Tremaine Moore from Arkansas was huge, and Pope is even bigger. He chose Texas over Texas A&M. That'll definitely benefit them in SEC basketball play next fall and winter. But right now, this is Terry. This is what Rodney Terry's good at, Trey. He is a great communicator. He's a great relationship builder. He may not like his X's and O's in game, but he's going to put together a good roster, and he's going to bring in good guys. He's that type of personality and that type of coach. And so I think you got to really look at Terry and the staff, all those guys, Frank Hay, Ty Larson, all those guys they're critical into rebuilding that program, it seems like, every year. And this is what Rodney Terry's good at. This is what he can do. He can sell that program. And I think that's the biggest thing in getting Pope and a Tremaine Mark on this team for next year is they not only upgraded, but they got a little bit younger too. And so I think that's where it's going to tie in. And you add Trey Johnson, who had a phenomenal McDonald's All-American game. This roster just became a little bit more fun to watch than the constant ball screens from Dylan Dessou. Like, that to me became a little monotonous. And so the fact that they've added these guys, I just think the product on the court is going to look better.
You're probably right about that. I do think the jury is still out, though, with Rodney's ability to construct a roster that fits his system. Now, last year was a bit of an asterisk because they lose a couple of top-flight true freshmen who would come in and at least provide minutes in that rotation, if not starting in one case. So you're a little bit handicapped there. This year, it is a great convergence of guys so far, including upperclassmen. Here's what worries me about that, though. And look, I say that understanding that Duke is about to have to replace like 7 of their top 8 guys, too. There is a version of this that will be happening most college basketball off seasons. But I also just saw a UConn team go back-to-back that had a lot of guys who bought into the system. It's hard for dudes to just come together and play their best basketball together in a limited amount of time. And Rodney does seem like he is taking that for the fences swing this year with the guys that he's bringing in. Trey Johnson is only going to be here for 1 year. The 3 transfers that he had gotten before today with Pope were all guys that have 1 year of eligibility remaining. So it's a 1 year experiment. Can you make things work in that 1 year? Can you get more of an offense going, get a little bit more creative, maybe instill some more motion principles like what Chris Beard had here? You know, this team is going to play hard on defense and hopefully they're in good positions more often than not. I just wonder if he's bringing too many 1 year rentals in that ultimately don't meet whatever the preseason expectation ends up being, and also further handicapping this program for the years to come.
Trey, that's a great point. That's what I meant earlier, too, about, you know, this is the norm now, I think, in college basketball. The one-year rental, ask John Calipari how his career has gone with the one-year rental, because that's essentially the NBA one-and-done guys. And like you said, Duke, they've got a lot of turnover going on in that program. UConn kept all their guys.
Yeah.
And that continuity is part of the reason they were able to sustain a run. That's where you're going to see, I think, your better teams in the, you know, when you get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four, the guys that have stayed together and played the longest. I played basketball in college, and there is nothing more important than playing with the same guys at the same time, doing all the same things. There's just a harmonious, you know, vibe about that everyone knows what the other one's doing. But again, I think this is the new age of college basketball. I think this is kind of what we need to expect, what we're going to see. You know, you never know with Trey Johnson. Say Trey has an incredible freshman year, and then something happens towards the end of the season, and he gets hurt, and he winds up having to come back for another year. You get that. Pope's only a sophomore, so you know you'll get him back for an extra year unless he does really well and goes to the NBA draft early. A lot of things can happen. So many scenarios. But again, I think this is the norm. I think this is what we're going to see the most common with, at least at this stage with Rodney Terry and the Horns, is when they lose some guys, the one-year rentals are so much more valuable than your 4-star and even 5-star recruits sometimes, because they have experience. They've gone through the wars. They've gone through the battles. And to those coaches, that's more valuable than a high schooler coming into a program with no experience.
And to the Calipari example, too, by the way, he was taking mostly one-and-done guys straight out of high school. I would much rather take a guy who has shown that ability at the college level, who you only get for a season or maybe 2 seasons, than some wet behind the ears freshman who is already eyeballing the NBA following said college basketball season.
No, that's it. I agree. I totally agree. Give me the one and done guy that's gone through some wars, that's played in the Big Ten, in the Pac-12, in the SEC, in the Big 12. Give me some of those guys. That's what college football is not a whole lot further off than that. If you want to take there's a lot of guys that would rather take a junior all-conference offensive tackle than a true freshman coming in as an 18-year-old that hasn't started developing his body yet. It's just kind of how college athletics is going.
We are about 24 hours from the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft. Justin, you are a Dallas Cowboys fan. You're not a self-loathing Dallas Cowboys fan. You're a Jerry Jones-loathing Cowboys fan. Even still, this is your team. You do root for them. What do you hope their focus is in the draft starting tomorrow over the next 3 days?
Yeah, got to beef back up that offensive line. They did an amazing job in the 2010s at building out one of the best offensive lines in the NFL for years. Now they have to rebuild. They've got to do that. I could see them going that way early. I'd like to see them add another corner because I'm not really sure if Deron Bland's going to stay where he's at. Diggs is coming off of an injury. The defensive line, they can't add too many defensive linemen. And I think they've done really well finding those guys like late in the draft and being able to develop some of those guys. But to me, I'm almost in the boat of go ahead and get you an offensive tackle, especially at left tackle, and then go best player available. They need a running back. They don't have a running back. And right now, if you talk to sources around the Star, Jonathan Brooks in the second round is looking really tasty. Right now, the Texas tailback is a guy that's been on their radar for a long time. I think they could add something there as well. I will say this. I would just pick well. Get the best player available if you have to, because I don't know if you saw the press conference yesterday, but with McCarthy and Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, that is more of a circus than I even imagined.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones said stuff that made absolutely no sense. It's almost like watching someone in a high political office who is way too old for his job talking and stuttering and clamoring and not making sense. And now I get this pit in my stomach every time Jerry Jones is on camera because I don't know if he's all there. He certainly doesn't sound like he's all there. And when he says things, they don't always make a whole lot of sense. And if you're running the most valuable sports franchise in the world, that should terrify every fan and their brother. And so right now, just get the best player available in a future left tackle and tailback right now in this draft.
There's a really good chance Jerry Jones is trying to sniff random children's hair when he's out and about right now. And he's the guy most responsible for your franchise. That's not good.
It's painful. I'm sitting here watching it, and he said, you know why we were picking 24th? Because we were the 24th best team in the NFL. guys, stop putting – that's almost – isn't there like elder abuse? Isn't that a thing? Like people that abuse the elderly? At this stage, we are abusing the elderly. Jerry Jones shouldn't be anywhere near a microphone. Tell him to push a button when he wants to cash a check or transfer some funds. And get the heck out of the way. That is terrifying, Trey.
Yeah, I just can't wait until, I'm sorry, this is going to sound cruel, but it's not. When Jerry Jones dies, that's not the part that I can't wait for. I want Jerry to stay alive forever because then the Cowboys stay bad forever. But when Jerry Jones dies, I can't wait for the Jerry Jones hologram powered by AI to take over running the team. And it'll be the same exact crap that you guys have been dealing with for the last 30 or so years now, minus those Super Bowls. It'll just be a whole lot more of the same. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments on Wednesdays each and every week. Justin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Nothing but love, Trey.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, we have a real life weekend at Bernie's situation out of Brazil right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for...
Where are we at in society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism, that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. Perhaps all is not lost. But sadly, today is not that day. And we start in South America for tonight's Where Are We At stories. You've seen the movie Weekend at Bernie's before, right? I'm not going to pin Weekend at Bernie's 2 on you. I don't even think Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman saw that one. But most of us who were alive at the time saw part 1. It's trying to be a comedy, but it's a comedy, I think, in ways that may have gone beyond the filmmaker's expectations. For those millennials or Gen Zers now who maybe haven't seen that film, or God forbid if you're a Gen Alpha, and you're like me in my early teenage years, listening to sports radio rather than doing the smart thing, the thing that probably helps you connect to your classmates a little bit better and listening to music. Weekend at Bernie's was a movie about a couple of guys. How do I put this simply? God, I could spend the entire segment trying to explain this movie. But a couple of guys go to their boss's beach house. Feel like he was going to have them killed. My memory is a little bit fuzzy on this one now. I'm realizing it was probably a mistake to try and summarize Weekend at Bernie's. But their boss ends up dead. And they're concerned that they're going to get framed for the murder, so they are keeping him alive by toting his carcass around this beach vacation hotspot where he is also very popular, and making it seem like to everybody else who looks over at them that this dude is alive on the beach, hanging out on speedboats, even though his body ends up going overboard at a certain point, and thankfully he's tied to a rope, so he's just hitting dinghies left and right. I'm getting too deep into the storyline from Weekend at Bernie's. But these two guys are toting a dead body around, is the gist. I'm trying to avoid getting framed for a murder, even though the death was not their fault. By the way, I know people who have told me, now, I don't play a whole lot of golf, but sometimes I do, and I play with people that may be closer to death than those of us who are a little bit younger. And I had somebody in particular, not going to say his name, Bucky Godbolt, tell me that if we're ever out on the course together and he were to die out on the golf course, that I basically need to Weekend at Bernie's him through the rest of the round. I understand his logic. What else am I going to do? I mean, I can let next of kin know, but he wants to be, you know, he wants his dead body to be out on the golf course for the next little bit. Watching a hacker like me labor my way through the end of the round. I respect that. I hope it never happens. I don't want to be responsible for that dead body. I don't want to have to pick up a lifeless arm, truly, literally, lifeless arm, and wave at people like he's still around, like he's Uncle Buck just taking a nap next to me. I have to try his putter out if I do that, though. But we have a real-life version of Weekend at Bernie's happening down in Brazil, where a woman brought her dead uncle into her local bank in an attempt to take out a loan in his name. Erica de Souza Vieira Nunes. Let's try that again. Erica de Souza Vieira Nunes got caught on camera earlier this week in Rio de Janeiro, where she had wheeled her uncle's corpse in to try and secure some financing to the tune of a $3,400 loan. There are pictures online that you can see of this and also a video, sadly. At one point, she literally puts a pen in his hand and helps to direct his hand in signing paperwork. She is talking to him at certain points, making it seem like they're having a back and forth conversation. asking him if he can hear her and if he's listening, and then instructing him to sign. She's also holding his head up straight because, well, it's a corpse, and naturally the head is not going to stay up straight. It's going to fall backwards or fall forwards. Maybe it falls to the side, but even if it falls to the side, it probably rolls forward at that point. I'm thinking too deeply about the direction of a corpse's head. But I feel like the mechanics probably work out to where it falls to the side, it's going to roll down, right? Because even falling to the side, okay, I'll stop. I'll get back to the story here. Thankfully, employees at the bank were not only weirded out, but they also recognized that there was something majorly wrong here. And they did call the police, who arrested Erica. The victim's name was Paolo Roberto Braga. And he had been dead for hours before being wheeled into the bank. Erica is potentially going to be charged for a few different things, as you can imagine. Theft through fraud, embezzlement, and abuse of a corpse. Didn't realize that was a possibility. Is that because you're manipulating the corpse to seem alive? Like, what is the abuse there? Because I feel like the normal rules of abuse are a little bit different when you're talking about a corpse. Is it wrong that she's trying to weaken Bernice, her uncle? Absolutely. Should she have tried to forge his signature through his dead hand to get a $3,400 loan? No. How abusive was that, though? It is just a corpse, after all. I don't want to diminish this man in his life, but he's no longer alive. He is dead. So what is the abuse? Perhaps it's semantic, but I do need an answer to that question before I go along with abuse of corpse. Regardless, stupid move by this woman. Even if she is a big Andrew McCarthy fan. One more story for where are we at today. There are just certain names that you should probably try to avoid giving your kid in 2024. Some names that have been on that banned list for a long time now. First name that always comes to mind for me, Adolf. Are we far enough removed where Genghis is on the board again, despite the fact that he's responsible for killing more innocent people than I think anybody in the history of this planet? Is Genghis back in play now? Because Genghis is a pretty cool name. Adolf, not even that cool of a name. But it's completely off limits now. That, well, the world's most famous Adolf did what he did back during World War II and before that. And I think if you're talking about just about anything in the world of Nazis, including the word Nazi, not a good idea to call yourself or your offspring Nazi. There are some words from that era, though, that fall into more of a gray area than a lot of people realize. And unfortunately, a woman whose parents bestowed a certain name on her is having a tough go of it as it pertains to her ability to use Uber. That's right, just use Uber. Her name is Swastika Chandra. Some of you may be familiar with where I'm headed here, but while swastikas are the most prominent symbol of Nazi Germany, it also has more of a positive meaning, a less genocide-y meaning. In Hinduism, as well as Sanskrit. You see, swastika in Sanskrit means good luck, and the symbol itself has been used as a positive symbol in Hinduism for thousands of years. Swastika Chandra was born in Fiji And she lives in the States here now, but unfortunately, Uber won't allow her to ride with her birth given name because it is swastika. I was putting in a food order one afternoon and went to pay at the payment stage, and this pop-up came up saying, your first name is in violation and you need to change your name on the app. It's unfortunate, swastika, but... And I don't like to kowtow to the pitchforks and the torches. You got to change the name, though, if you're going to operate here in the States or probably just about anywhere else on this planet. It's not going to work for you. Your parents didn't have bad intentions here, but sometimes you got to own the mistake and make that change. Some names that you should probably also avoid. Last name, Chandra. Let's go. Let's try to avoid Confederate flag Chandra, especially if you're going to remain here in the U.S. Are there any others? Maybe Mussolini Chandra is probably not going to work that well either. You know what? Send me an email. We'll talk. And that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. Join me tomorrow. The show is going to start out with a 2-segment chat with ESPN's Matt Miller, getting you ready for the NFL draft. In the meantime, though, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.